This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Of course, we are now into the 9 days, which of course comes with all kinds of emotions and feelings about the period that we're in now, and sort of connecting it, I suppose, from the historical context to the current context, where there were attempts to destroy the Jews and to destroy Israel and to destroy the holy sites of Israel, the holy sites of the Jews. Also back in the day when the temple stood in Jerusalem. And of course, that's what the 9 days are all about, the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, which is when the date that we commemorate the destruction of both of the temples. And in the modern day, of course, we're also fighting a type of battle.
That's for sure.
Not necessarily for the protection of the temple, but for the protection of our Jewish state and for the protection of our right to be Jews around the world. So I think that there is very much a linkage between what happened then and what's happening now. And that ties quite well into this little snippet where the Israeli security team that were stationed there, border police officers who were stationed at one of the checkpoints that divide Israel from the Palestinian Authority area. And there's a lot written and said and criticisms directed at Israel for these checkpoints and for the work that these border police undertake at these checkpoints. But this incident really justifies everything that goes on at those checkpoints, because in one particular case, officers stopped a suspicious-looking vehicle for inspection. When they opened the boot of the car, they discovered two illegal infiltrators, both of whom came from the Arab city of Tul Karem, hiding inside the boot. One of them turned out to be a known and wanted terrorist, somebody who was apparently suspected of currently planning a terror attack against Israel. This was the individual who was found in the boot of the car at the checkpoint. Of course, those individuals were arrested, including the driver, who happened to be an Arab living in East Jerusalem and with Israeli citizenship. Mm. He was the person driving these two individuals, hiding them in the boot of the car. This could have been a very, very serious incident, a terror attack that could have taken place anywhere had that vehicle been allowed to transit the checkpoint and drive into Israel. Because once they're inside the boundaries of Israel, of course, they're very free to move around wherever they wish. That could have been a potential disaster. So, for those people who feel sensitive about Israel policing its borders, even though it isn't really an official border, but controlling those who come in and go out of Israel, the main area of Israel, this incident, I think, should hopefully help you to appreciate that security is really necessary. I mean, even when we drive to the Dead Sea or we drive to Eilat or wherever we wish to go, and we might traverse parts of the Palestinian Authority territory, we are allowed to do that, even though we are not allowed to go inside Palestinian Authority cities and towns. That we are prohibited from doing. It just should just be registered that we are prohibited from doing that. But we can drive through certain roads that form part of the Palestinian Authority in order to get to other places. And we have to pass through these checkpoints. And some of the scenes that we see at these checkpoints are distressing, because people get stopped and their vehicles get searched and they might be questioned even somewhat aggressively. But I think we have to just understand that our young border police who are manning these checkpoints and having to put up with a great deal of abuse and a massive amount of responsibility to secure the boundaries of our country, to make sure that terrorists like those individuals who they found in that boot don't get into our towns and cities. I think one has to respect and appreciate the job that they do. Absolutely. And understand why we need those checkpoints.
100%. Let's talk about what is happening between the U.S. and Iran. It seems that the U.S. has imposed a naval blockade, as far as I understand. How significant is this?
Yeah, so again, I mean, we have to kind of clutch at straws here to know what's real and what's true, because President Trump has said, well, a naval blockade has been imposed on Iran, which means Iranian ships can't move out in and out of the Straits of Hormuz. But in the same breath, he said there is plenty of oil flowing through the Straits of Hormuz, which is his way of trying to indicate that the U.S. military has secured a safe route to allow ships that are not linked to Iran, that are not bringing oil from Iran in and out of the Straits of Hormuz. And therefore, he claims that there is oil flowing in and out. I have no way of really verifying how true or not true that is. We do know that every statement that President Trump makes and every statement that is written on his Truth Social and people say on his behalf really do need to be fact-checked, because he has the tendency to be a little overconfident and perhaps overstate the realities of the situation, sometimes untruthfully in order to try to present a certain front, and sometimes just to somehow ramp up the situation a little bit. So it's very, very difficult for us to know exactly what's true and what's not true. But it seems that one of the facts that has been verified is that the U.S. military did attack Iran last night. And apparently there was some sort of a 7-hour period during which these U.S. attacks were carried out against Iran. Not all of them focused in the Straits of Hormuz. So here we have a little escalation. Here we have a situation where now, for the first time since the ceasefire memorandum of understanding, call it what you wish, was entered into some months ago, the U.S. is now attacking the western part of Iran, which wasn't on the radar prior to this, at least during this round of conflict between the U.S. and Iran. So definitely a small escalation, maybe even a more significant escalation, that is noticeable and is different from yesterday. And that's what I was just saying yesterday, that it just seems like every day it ramps up just that little bit more. Every day it's just a little bit more and a little bit more. There's nothing dramatic. And interestingly, neither the United Arab Emirates nor Saudi Arabia nor Israel are involved in this conflict at the moment, because it seems as if though when Iran retaliates against these U.S. attacks and attacks countries within the Gulf area, those three countries are currently off limits for Iran as far as Iran is concerned, that they haven't actually carried out any reprisal attacks against Israel or Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates. That could easily change in a heartbeat. So at least for now, that's the way that the war is being conducted. But again, just another little escalation, which potentially moves to the next level. What do we do next? Once we attacked the western part of Iran, then what happens? Tehran, we attack, government officials, we start taking out, senior leadership. Where do we begin and end with this? So I think that every little escalation is potentially noticeable and potentially something that could contribute to a much greater conflict in the near future. So I'm still of the view that every little escalation is important and that potentially we are heading headlong into some more of an escalation and some more of a conflict that ultimately will involve Israel. And of course, we have to be ready for that.
Yeah, it just seems that way. Something will just push it over the edge. That's what happens.
Correct.
It sort of reaches this tipping point. It is still very significant that Iran, through all of this, has not fired anything at Israel.
It's absolutely significant, and there is no doubt that we can read many things into that. Whether we want to say, well, you know, that's something that Iran is holding back for when the conflict really blows open and they can and give it all, because they know that once they attack Israel, that effectively will blow open the whole thing. So the question is whether they want to be the cause of that or whether they're waiting for the moment that justifies it. I have little doubt that Israel will finally be on their radar for attacks, but for now, at least not. And I think it is significant to note that. I also think that it's significant that the US has focused a lot of its attention on the Straits of Hormuz, because, of course, the whole economic aspect of the war cannot be underestimated. I mean, the military war was critical, but I think that one of the things that wasn't properly exercised to the end was the economic squeeze. Then there's no doubt that it really affected Iran. And when it came down to negotiating that memorandum of understanding, it was noticeable that they wanted to include all kinds of protections for their economic independence. So I think that that's really where we need to focus. And if there are going to be attacks carried out against Iran or military seizures laid, then that has really got to focus on how to somehow squeeze the economy and squeeze the economic aspects of it. I think that that message has been received.
Let's talk about Knesset. They have passed a bunch of laws before its dissolution ahead of the election. What are some of these laws?
So first of all, the election will be on the 27th of October, the first time, I think, in 50 years that the Knesset will actually serve out its full time in office, its full four-year period. That hasn't happened for a very, very long time. But it is noticeable that as a result of that date now being set in stone, the Knesset, the government, the ruling coalition has suddenly jumped into action, and a whole raft of laws have been put through the Knesset. Some of them have already been passed. Some of them are on the way. And the problem with these laws is that they are so politically sensitive. It just almost feels like that period when the US president is about to go out of office. He's completed his eight-year term, and he's now pardoning people without consequences, because he knows that he's not up for election, that there is no real comeback, that he has legal way of pushing this through. And this is his way of doing it without having to answer to anybody. And it feels almost like that, except that it's different here. And what's different is that potentially the same coalition could be re-elected and could then have to deal with the consequences of these laws that they're passing now. But the laws that are being passed are, in the first instance, the basic law was amended to include the fact that Torah study, the study of the Holy Scriptures, is part of our indelible right in Israel and is part of the basic law, which really functions as a constitution in Israel. We've had that discussion before, and my feelings about it, where I felt that, you know, benignly, there should be no reason why something like this shouldn't be entrenched in law. But the problem here is it really comes with such a political angle to it in order to somehow try to exempt those of the ultra-Orthodox community who don't wish to serve in the army, because you can see what's going to come up in front of a court next term around when the court is faced with challenges as to why ultra-Orthodox youth are not going to the army. Then the argument will be, well, it's entrenched in our basic law that they are entitled to study Torah, and the army disrupts that right that's entrenched in our quasi-constitution for them to be able to study. So therefore, the fact that it's in the basic law really trumps everything else. If there's anything else in our laws that potentially conflict with that, then the basic law should ultimately rule. So that is really the way that it's been received across Israel. Some people say, we don't have the need to put this in our basic law. For 78 years that Israel has been in existence, everybody's had the right to study Torah, just as they have the right to study physics or chemistry or accounting or anything else. There's nothing that basically infringes upon that right. And yet it's been seen necessary to include it in the basic law. We understand where that comes from. Highly, highly problematic. And of course, Then the next law that was passed was that at least for the next 7 months, those people who have not turned up for military service while being called up to serve are not liable to be arrested. That is a new law that was passed this week. And of course, it focuses on the ultra-Orthodox community, many of whom have avoided military service in spite of having a legal requirement to turn up and serve. And now they're being saved from being arrested for not turning up to for military service, at least for the next 7 months. And of course, what's interesting here is that the Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, has written a letter to the Prime Minister and to the Minister of Defense to say that he feels that this law is inequitable, that it is unfair, that it infringes upon the safety of our country because the army right now needs people desperately to join. We are fighting a war of more than 1,000 days and we need as many people to join as possible. And this law effectively distinguishes between certain sectors of the population, those who do turn up and those who don't turn up to serve, and ultimately weakens our military capability and weakens our society. And it's interesting that the Chief of General Staff have said that because generally, the military generals are not allowed to intervene on political issues and they are prevented from doing so. And yet the Chief of General Staff has stood up on this occasion and made his voice really clear against what is usually acceptable for somebody in his position. So these laws are very, very controversial. There are a number of others along the same vein, but they are very controversial and there is definitely consequences. Mm. The interesting thing, by the way, just as a last comment, is that the members of the Likud party are actually people who do serve in the army. And so by the Likud government doing this and enacting these laws effectively to satisfy their ultra-Orthodox coalition partners, they're actually kicking sand in the face of their own members. And that's going to be an interesting consequence to see how that pans out in the election.
Going to be very, very interesting to see how this does play out. It is 8:01. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. We'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning, 7:45, and continue these conversations.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.